start straight away with a poem. The first one I've prepared is entitled St. Bridget's Day. You know that St. Bridget's is the first day of spring in Ireland. It took me about 25 years to get used to the idea. In France, the first day of spring is the 21st of March, so there's about 7 weeks difference, but I realized after a while that the light comes and it's a sign of spring. So the poem refers to a mantle or a cloak. Probably everyone here, maybe not everyone here, knows the story of Bridget and her cloak. Bridget was had been a goddess, and then she was a saint, and she demanded from her king father some land to build a monastery and to provide shelter for homeless persons. So he was very annoyed that she had refused to marry, and convenience and expanding his territory. So he told her she could have as much land as her cloak would cover. And of course, miracle, the cloak expanded to cover as much ground as was required. So, St. Bridget's Day. Smog on Bridget's Day. Inert locusts of grime and grit hover a menace to skin and lungs. Even the birds make short journeys. In keener air, sequoia's sap bubbles upward, so loud humans can hear. Country Bridget, please come to town. Let your mantle cloak my city. On a cold, calm, winter fog day, were you also sore with longing for heaving sap, break of bloom, rain on ground, the warm, wild, high westerly wind, the quiet power of long daylight. The second poem is called Hopscotch. The title is Hopscotch, and there's an Irish poet who had died now. He was a poet and a performer, a street performer. He was called Pat Inglesby. And somewhere in one of his books, I wasn't able to find a reference, but in one of his books, he introduces one of his poems, saying something like, "And now a hard to understand poem for the people who need this type of poem." So this one, Hopscotch, is a bit like that. It's a sort of, it's really a autobiographical poem with emphasis on my childhood, so Hopscotch. Shortcomings, fat and few, brick and block, all shortcuts, long jottings, spiral seed, labyrinths bound in blue. Stubborn rose, dug by hand, wrong-headed back and side, trick and treat, trip up feet, round the world and inside out. Unbudging, the silence sings, see-through hearts of hailed comets, comb and brush, curly clouds, thunders kick and punch pillows, stretching up wide and tall, safe passwords of old wardrobes, wait for night, wait for day, wait for the moon to skip away, shake and fold the sheets of rain, tip and toss that pinch of salt, pummel light with small mirrors, beeswax winter with dust roots, hopscotch beams of braided suns, rake and free an open air. Number three is Picardy Village. Picardy, the name of the village is Picquigny. And Picquigny's village was the site in the Middle Ages of an important treaty when a war was averted between King of France and a King of England who had sailed over across. And a chronicler said that at the day-long banquet that followed the successful negotiations, there had been no mention of water. So obviously they've been celebrating with wine. to Picardy village. Grandmother, you're 15, around 1890. At your school in Ennis, you win a gold medal for excellence in French. Your father, your nun sister, contrive for you to spend a year at a small convent school in the Picardy village of Picquigny, of medieval peace treaty fame. You charm teachers, pupils. For decades, the gardener has struggled to breed a new, perfect rose. He names his triumph Miss Selina. You too, mother, 30 years on, age 12, find welcome there. Placed in the junior class, you learn French, the metric system, how to live without tea or bread or butter on bread. You rejoice that you're not the only older child among the little ones. Several girls your own age catch up on the 4 years of war that emptied this school too close to the front line. The best seats, the poems that are the best seats, and then in brackets are Luke 20, 45, 47. And the reference, as some of you may have guessed, is the numbers in the title refer to Luke's Gospel. And the quotation is from the Gospel is, in the hearing of all the people, he said to the disciples, beware of the scribes who like to walk around in long robes and love to be greeted with respect in the marketplaces and to have the best seats in the synagogues and places of honor at banquets. They devour widows' houses and for the sake of appearance say long prayers. They will receive greater condemnation. And I think in the whole book, this is the only really angry poem, I suppose. The best seats. The temple fought police, shock troopers imprisoned in two-tier battlements, have invoked destruction, bolstered it with blessings. Famining, starved rulers, they force-feed patient wars. Having glued their eyelids, waxed solid their ears, can they help but miss out the panicked, hopeful signs, stars, sighs, groans, loud cries, that escort and assist the new birth of good news? They pin on souls' lapels mispatterned duty rows, venerate dust-gilded plaster-cast absolutes, refute their mirrors' portraits of petrified, cultic, rule book idolaters overruled. Thank you. The next poem is entitled Sentinels. And is the microphone working or is
yes,
it making
me?
Okay, thank you. So the incident in the poem didn't happen to me. It was recounted to me at the time, and now the person involved doesn't have any recollection, neither of the episode nor of telling me about it. So memory, this is the way it works. Sentinels. In French towns, once a month, overladen households jettison on doorsteps bulky, unwanted goods. Municipal declutter day, the magic morning when their ousted chattels turn our boon and booty. Between dawn and sunrise, we are lucky and lose that race for twin armchairs to a young, toil-worn pair. They gallop off in search of a pumpkin trailer for the royal ride home of their footpath windfall. earnest prince and princess, gum-chewing sentinels, their children sit the claim, blink themselves awake. The love it for both the hill walking companion and for the hills, the beautiful land, present and past. So the poem is entitled A Monster Companion. Peeper Hill, Mount Callan, Cahochomoin, Wucht Mormon, Galtibeg, Mushurumor, Cahobarna, Molochanish, the Paps. Warm wind furrows the bog cotton, the claws of firs draw labyrinths, hurtle berries weed teeth and tongue, meadow sweet clouds storms the haze, cairns nipple breasts on twin mountains, we fat lichens bless stone age kings, heather bubbles back to the sun, I watch you drink straight from the earth. Okay, so yes, I've never seen anyone drink from the earth before. For me, growing up in Paris, water came from the tap, and I saw Matty bend down, and we were hot from the climbing, and I saw this, and I told him, you can't really drink, it's dirty. And he said, no, the earth has filtered it, it's clean. You know, really a revelation. So, the next poem is entitled Treasures. So it's another poem addressed to my Irish grandmother. And it takes place 55 years after the one Picardy village. In World War II. My mother worked as a secretary in an American bank in Paris, and her employers warned that as enemy aliens, she and her mother would be put in internment camps once the invasion took place. So after the 1940 invasion, they advised her to leave with her mother and try and make it to safety to England. And both born before independence, they carried British passports. Treasures. Sticky from a whole week, hitching roads under bombs. You then embarked the last ship to leave that besieged town. Relished a proper wash. Felt at last truly safe. Where I live, my playground is the dust of tiny green-railed public gardens. At knee height, notices tell dogs and small children to keep off mangy lawns. Every day at bath time, I hear Mother retell your joint escape story. How else would I believe soap and water to be unparalleled treasures? More precious than the case containing your jewels, your beauty recipes, the play you had written on the theme from Baruch, all left on the quayside. Yes, they were only allowed one suitcase. The ship was carrying, you know, about double the amount of people it ought to, and they were only allowed to keep one suitcase. So the next one is entitled Obscure. It's another war story, but not a war poem, but no happy ending. It is set in a small French provincial town, and the old tower is Moorish, a witness to earlier population movements, invasion from and reception proceeding. Less than 20 years after the time of the poem, the town received migrants from North Africa after the end of the Algerian War. Lately, similar divisions have surfaced about the welcoming or not of migrants from the Middle East. Obscure. By the arched village gate, a monument fenced off by wrought iron, box edging, white gravel, vibrant flower beds, honors the local dead of two and more wars. Within the walls, among cobbled lanes, hollyhocks, its roof still intact, a squat ancient tower. Nearby, the golden sandstone town hall, balconies a ravine, faces ranged wooded hills, armed with a sundial, scripted adages, a tracery of blue and yellow arcane symbols. Upon its side wall in the narrow shade, a climbing rose is allowed to begin to obscure from a white marble plaque the two long gilded columns of names, ages, dates and places of death when known, of refugees whom some welcomed, others handed over. For years I agonized about what I'd have done had I lived there and then. Now I scrabble for how to neighbor, reconfigure my own everyday betrayals of myself. The next poem is entitled Danser la gigue, meaning dancing the jig. And just as an introduction, in 19th century France, there was much internal migration of people seeking work from Brittany and Auvergne towards Paris. And then the other part. My mother went to school in Limerick until the age of 12, living with an aunt, uncle and cousins before moving to France, where her mother was governess to the daughter of a wealthy family. Danser la gigue. This French sarcasm pictures mostly children caught up in wild, frenzied play. Sometimes adults hopping from foot to foot, holding in a pea. Thus, language drags along unawares the legacy of scorn. Some French people once looked down on their Breton or Auvergnat neighbors. Little wonder our family guards secret like treasure. The exotic fact that our Irish mother can dance jigs and reels. From time to time, we beg a performance. Into her late 60s, in between chores, she gives it a whirl, laments the lack of a beat, limps her own steps. We clap our pride. Out of breath, she flops onto a chair, smiling back on the day she danced, age 4, hoisted on a podium with her golden curled friend for Limerick's Bishop O'Dwyer, come to celebrate a forgotten school feast. Before noon. So after the grandmother and mother poems, a mother-in-law poem. So, and this poem is actually addressed to our sons, but she's the real heroine. She's the best mother-in-law. She had a difficult aunt-in-law, and she made up for it by being the perfect mother-in-law. Before noon. Your shirt tails waltz with the morning, marmalade paints your ears. Odd socks, ripped gansies, haven't held you back. Galloping to the shop, on your own, first time ever, for milk, cream, firelighters, You scattered their breakfast to Granny's 12 chickens, scooped up all her best buds, planted them on our tray. Before noon, she'll breeze in with hot toast, porridge, a warm newspaper propping up the teapot. You'll surface in her wake, break in on her review of the front page court case, ask for permission to serve lunch to Goldie as soon as you've coaxed the cat into lifting his paw out of the windowsill bowl. Goldie was the goldfish house. Now, of course, the father poem, or at least he gets a mention. And just for information, Monton is on the French Riviera, on the coast between Monte Carlo and the border with Italy. For the geographically challenged, as I was used. Mimosas. July. School over forever. And we're moving house. The sixth story we leave combines the grandiose views of the Mont Valérien beyond the Bois de Boulogne with the sweeping searchlight that tops the Eiffel Tower. Mother's dream has come true. On a tour in her 20s, she had fallen in love with the town of Menton, where pink and white laurels, lemon and orange trees lined streets, where the Alps balustrade a border among palms and olives. City bred, my father turns passionate gardener, amazed by his own green fingers, the knife an old war has left him. He plants small mimosas against the sea background. In 2 years, their shade at midday is taller than me. Autumn term in college, 200 miles away, my dreams sniff the fragrance of fluffy golden spheres. But mother claims her view, and he fells my totems. The only thing ever I've had to forgive them. Short and no explanation. Friends, like spiders' webs, the broom forgot. For 40 years, words have bobbined, tufted, knotted threads between us. Our unpolished, zestful egos bicker, tussle, but we've begun laughing out loud at their antics. Thank you very much.